Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Terrascope podcast. I'm Kyle Hardcastle, the co-founder and director of intelligence for Terrascope. And in this episode, I have the pleasure of being joined by Andy Williams. Andy's a director and deputy chairman for TinyG, a non-for-profit global terrorism information network that seeks to enable law enforcement and private security to share experiences and best practice. Andy's security and counter-terrorism heritage also comes from several years of experience in senior private security roles, as well as service in both the Metropolitan and City of London Police. So Andy, a very warm welcome to the Terrascope podcast, and thank you for giving up your time to join us today.
It's my great pleasure, Carl. Thank you very much indeed, and Happy New Year to you and your listeners.
Thank you very much, and to you as well. So I'm sure that many of our listeners have heard of TinyG before, considering its sort of global remit and reach that it has. But could you give us a bit of an overview of what TinyG is, its history, and what it seeks to achieve?
Absolutely. So my co-director, Dave Evans, and the founder of the group was doing some work for Reuters, the International News Association in New York City. And his customer was the head of security there. And they got chatting after their meeting about some of the issues relating to lack of information from business to business neighbors, but also from law enforcement, particularly in New York City. So that as users, as residents in New York City, they just weren't getting the information they needed. And so the idea was formed probably over a couple of glasses of lemonade, I'm sure, that actually wouldn't it be great if there was a way of helping each other to share information and to just pass on information that may be of interest and use to our neighbours. And that was the basic idea. And from then, TinyG was formed. So we first of all held some meetings in New York City where organisations that were based in Manhattan, particularly Manhattan, could come along, share their information, share their issues. The NYPD and the FBI were invited to come along. And actually they took that invitation up, and it was from very small sort of start, from that very first opportunity really to let people know what the issue was and what they wanted to achieve. The thing sort of grew quite organically. Within a year, we were sort of having meetings twice a year in New York City, once a year in London. Our first meeting was at Barclays on Canary Wharf. And it just grew. It grew organically because there was a need for it. People recognised that sharing information, sharing intelligence, but sometimes just having an opportunity to talk to the right people or having the ear of the people that were needed was sometimes just what it needed in order for people to develop these relationships and these networks. So TinyG continued like that for many years, growing its audience base, growing where it operated. I should say, actually, also, I missed the point now, that one of the early things that came from it too was the introduction of our email alert system. So people could send in information into us. We would then share it with the wider network, or we would find our own information from various sources, send it out to our members completely free of charge. It was free of charge then, and it remains free of charge to use now. And we would send information alerts out via email globally. And that was soon picked up by some of our larger supporter organisations, some of the large banks who operate internationally. And before we knew it, within two or three years of starting the organisation up, we had members in over 100 or 130 countries, I think it was, to start with. We've now grown there slightly. Because we were providing something that was free, it was something that was useful, and there wasn't really anybody else doing it. There wasn't anybody else providing the kind of level of information that we could share, and certainly not doing it for free. So that was kind of how the organisation started.
Fantastic. And I think, really, when we look back at when TinyG was founded, the kind of air around counterterrorism-related information was the world of government agencies and things like that, and very, very secretive. But I think what TinyG's created and is at the forefront of, and really the sort of early initiator of, is this idea of actually, when we look at the terrorist threat and sharing best practice, that everyone has a role to play in it. There does need to be a very good working relationship between law enforcement and agencies, and also businesses and private organisations as well, because essentially it's through those relationships that we can put ourselves in the best position to protect locations, people, and share that information that kind of leads us to that point. So on a sort of personal level, I've been a member of the Tiny G Network for several years. I joined when I was back in the Metropolitan Police and continue to do so now. And I'm also pleased to say that since founding Terrascope, we as a company have also become a formal affiliate of the Tiny G Network. So you mentioned that Tiny G Network has 130 plus countries involved. It really does have that sort of global reach. I'm just wondering, from a private security perspective, what sort of other organisations are involved with the network? Is it the big sort of corporations, or is it a whole variety of different organisations?
I think one of the great privileges for me is when I'm fortunate enough to travel to Tiny G events is actually the broad range of people that attend our events. Sure, we've got the big multinational corporates, the big financial organisations, but actually we've got literally the single person operations as well. We've got people who may have. I'll give you an example. We were in Hartford in Connecticut for an event there. I think it was 2018, and there was a chap sitting in the corner of the room who very quietly, studiously making notes throughout the entire event. He came up to me at the end and he said, "I just want to thank you so much for what you guys do." He said, "I'm basically a shopkeeper, but he's a man from New York City, a man who had born and bred in New York City, but had kind of semi-retired out to New England." And he said, he had friends and family that were involved in 9/11, friends who had lost family, neighbors. And he said, we just didn't have anyone that we could turn to sort of support us and give us information and stuff. The police service in New York City, the NYPD, is an amazing organization. But as you probably know, Carl, the law enforcement in the US is quite different to us, where we've only got the 43 forces in the UK. Just in Manhattan alone, there are over 80 different separate law enforcement organizations with badge-carrying, gun-toting officers. And so the ability to share information, even within law enforcement, is limited by the scale of the operation there. So this chap came up to me and he said, "I just want to thank you so much. I'm no longer kind of operating in New York City, but it's so nice to know that there's an organization out there that's doing something to share the message and to let people, regardless of wealth, regardless of position, to let us have access to this kind of information." So for me, that was what it was all about. That was more important to me than knowing that all of the large banks and corporates in the world are in the room. It's lovely to have them and they're always welcome. But actually just knowing that we've made a difference to that one guy was what it's all about.
Yeah, that's really good to hear, because I know quite quickly, especially in recent years or over the last decade, we've come to realise that, again, counterterrorism and the terrorist threat isn't just the big corporations. It is all types of businesses, right down, as you say, to like your market stall sort of holder. And it's great that there is this network out there where they can engage and find out information on a topic which, for us working in the industry, it's our bread and butter. We deal with it on a daily basis. But if you're running a business and security isn't your primary kind of concern or area of business, a lot of the information and stuff around terrorism, it's like walking in the dark a little bit. So having organizations like Tiny G to help people and point them in the right direction, I think is really, really vital, especially considering our first episode in this podcast series was with Nick Aldworth and Fegan Murray talking about the Protect Duty and Martin's Law, which since that episode looks like the first draft of that's going to be produced for spring this year. And really interesting speaking to them about that is that the whole motivation for their campaign around Martin's Law and this idea of putting a legislative obligation on businesses to actually consider the terrorist threat and what they're going to do about it is that their main concern was those smaller companies, because the bigger organizations, they normally have budgets for security and they have security personnel and dedicated people to deal with a variety of different sorts of security challenges that they may face, including terrorism. But it is those smaller companies, those medium-sized companies, as you've just mentioned, that kind of maybe don't get so much support. So it's really good to know that Tiny G's supporting those smaller companies as well as the bigger ones as well.
That's exactly what it's about. But it's actually also, it kind of goes beyond that as well. And, with things like the attacks we've seen, the London Bridge, both of the London Bridge attacks, the Westminster
bridge attack and the fear that some people have in their mind about being the victim of some random attack, you know, walking through central London or Birmingham or wherever it may be. There are individuals who are concerned that they're going to be the next person that's stabbed out of the blue. And actually, so some of our responsibility, I think, we see it as being, you know, just kind of giving some context to the threat. So we all know that a marauding terrorist attack is possible, but it's not massively likely. And we don't want people sitting in their houses fearing for leaving the house and going into London shopping or going to the theatre or whatever. We don't want them to be panicking about whether or not it's safe to do that, because by and large, it is very safe to go and do that. And, you know, we want people to be out in the community, spending their money, engaging with their friends and their networks. And so putting some context around what the threat looks like is as important as sharing information about an actual attack. So it's part. So it's for everyone from the large multinational blue chip corporations to Mrs. Miggins, who lives down the high street. You know, that's for us, it's really important about being an accessible, free-to-use service so that anyone who wants to benefit from it, hopefully except for the bad guys, more of that later, that they can benefit from it.
Completely agree with all of that. And it's about trying to proportionately make people aware of what the realistic terrorist threat is. And as you say, thankfully, terrorist attacks in themselves are, especially within the West, are relatively rare. But when they do happen, we know it is a possibility they can happen. So when they do happen, we need to know that we are prepared and that we have done and put things in place as best as possible to protect ourselves from that eventuality. So you've given a bit of an overview of TinyG, the network, its foundation, a kind of underlying principle of why it was created. And you've also mentioned that TinyG have held some events globally as well. What sort of conferences and events have the TinyG held, and are there any coming up in the future?
Absolutely, yeah. So originally, when we first started, our events were sort of one-day conferences with perhaps five or six speakers in a big briefing room with perhaps 100 or 150 people in the room with a break for lunch. And that format works really well. You know, the typical kind of conference format works really well, an opportunity to ask questions at the end. The one thing that kind of binds all of our events together is the fact that we are only a counterterrorism organisation. We don't pretend to cross over into other forms of security management or law enforcement. However, we are entirely cognizant of the fact that counterterrorism or terrorism takes many forms. And therefore, whilst our theme is always counterterrorism, terrorism, actually what we try to do is to bring in people that can add relevant information to a terrorist attack, or how to mitigate that, or just how to manage your organization. And one of the ones that springs to mind was probably one of the best received presentations we've had was a colleague of ours from Philadelphia, a lady called Dr. Nicole Lipkin, who she's a psychologist by training and expertise, but she spoke about the psychology of management in the response to a major incident or a crisis. And she gave a fantastic presentation that talked about how on the event of 9/11, how the head of security for Morgan Stanley was able, having spent so much time basically forcing the employees of Morgan Stanley in the Twin Towers to exercise leaving on a regular basis, kind of like perhaps once or twice a year, they would, every single person from the chief executive down to the most junior employee would be made to leave their floor or whatever it was, the 80th floor or whatever it was, and to walk down the stairs and to leave the building through the fire escape system. So that when it actually happened on that awful morning, every single employee in Morgan Stanley in the building and visitor in the building left the building because they'd exercised, they trained for that eventuality or another emergency evacuation eventuality. And it meant they were ready and able to escape. And the only two people from Morgan Stanley that sadly passed away on that day were Rick Griscola, who's the head of security, and one of his security supervisors, who went back into the building to assist other occupants to evacuate. Now, that of itself wasn't a terrorism or counterterrorism presentation, but it was the psychology of leadership in the event of an overwhelming issue, an overwhelming event. It was fascinating, and it kind of speaks to all of us about our responsibilities if we're leaders or if we're employees, about that onus that's on us to do the right thing and to prepare. And of course, you know, those of us that have been in law enforcement, those of us that have worked in the counterterrorism arena in recent years, are only too well aware of the need to prepare and to exercise, and they happen on a regular basis now. And I think probably the British emergency services are now among the best prepared in the world because of our joint exercising and ability to communicate using airwave and the rest of it. But all of those came about as a result of learning the really important lessons. And I guess so for us, whether it be the outcomes of the 772 bombings and finding out about the inability of the emergency services to communicate and what was done to address that, all of these things really for us all add fantastic value because they do translate into private organisations too. And whether that be the, you know, the need for the security team and the maintenance team, for example, to exercise working together on planned evacuation, whatever it may be, there are so many lessons to be learned. And all of these things we address in our meetings. We're really fortunate to have some really very senior law enforcement and government contacts who are part of the Tiny G leadership team. Neil Basu, very recently retired assistant commissioner from the Met, who was AC Special Operations, as you'll know, back until about 2021, is our group patron. The buy-in that we have from people like Mr. Basu and other senior leaders, Chief Constable Lucy Dorsey from British Transport Police, amongst others, they come along, they give presentations. So we provide access to people of that kind of calibre in terms of experience and strategic outlook that anybody in the audience can't really help but be impressed by or to leave there having learned something really important when you've got people like that that are presenting for us. So everything, as I say, everything from Nicole's fascinating presentation on leadership through to some of the really detailed, you know, overviews of what law enforcement are doing that Lucy and Neil are able to offer.
Really, really good. And I think the example you put there of the Morgan Stanley situation really highlights actually when we're talking about preparing for an eventuality such as a terrorist attack, we're not talking about spending thousands and thousands of pounds on security, physical security things, sometimes things such as rehearsing and practicing how to evacuate a building efficiently and quickly so that when something does happen, everyone knows instinctively what to do. Obviously, in that situation, went a long way with saving a lot of lives. And it's that sort of thing and that sort of learning and insight, which I think Tiny G really, really works well with. And one of the key themes that came up time and time again when you were just talking, Andy, was this idea of lessons learned and things like that. And I know I attended one of the Tiny G conferences that was held at the Tate Modern last year, which was actually focusing on lessons learned from terrorist events targeting crowded spaces specifically. And it was a fantastic event, as you say, completely free of charge to go to, and some really good speakers with some real world operational insight, having dealt with attacks of this sort of nature and what they went through and the challenges they faced and how they feel they themselves and others can better prepare for similar eventualities in the future. And for our work at Terrascope, it's kind of lessons learned is at the foundation of what we're trying to achieve as well. You know, we firmly believe that lessons learned and insight into terrorist threat can be gained by looking at previous incidents, and that when these lessons learned are considered by security professionals, that it will place them in the best position to protect locations and people. As an example of that, since we launched in June 2022 last year, off the top of my head, I think we've now got to 255 incidents that we've monitored and reported on. Many of them haven't actually turned out to be terrorist motivated attacks. However, when we looked at the targeting and the methodology of those incidents, they were reflective of the wider terrorist threat picture. So the actual capability that was demonstrated could have easily been a terrorist attack. It was just that the motivation of the perpetrator, the individual or individuals responsible for it, wasn't particularly motivated by terrorism. But we still kind of look at those incidents to think about, although it wasn't terrorism related, or if it is terrorism related, what can we learn from this? And how can we inform security professionals to help them better prepare and formulate that within their threat understanding and also their protective security posture? But kind of identifying lessons learned is the first kind of step with understanding the threat and what terrorism may look like. But I'm aware that Tyneagy also have a, you've developed your own training course, haven't you? A level 5 qualification for security professionals within terrorism awareness and management. I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that and what that seeks to achieve.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's one of the things that we're very lucky as an organisation is that people trust us, and people sort of now come to us as a go-to trusted group of professionals who they recognise, they can ask us questions, and we're not corporate, we're not commercial, we are just individuals. All volunteers who do what we do because we want to do it for the right reason. And as a result of that, I guess, people sort of said to us, do you guys offer any kind of training? And the truth was, no, we didn't. We didn't. It wasn't something that we'd really ever got round to doing. It's something that we kind of, the back of our mind, we thought we might. So a couple of years ago, we sat down and we developed this training course. It's at level 5. So it's a very accessible course, in the sense that the course itself is just 5 consecutive days of 1.5 hours a day on Teams with some pre-recorded video, with some moderated by a guy called Richard Bingley, who's our academic lead within Tyneagy. And we sort of seek to give people that may find themselves in the position of having to be the responsible person in an organisation or in a building if a terrorist event were to take place. It just gives them the building blocks, really, from which they can develop their own response and their own policies or their own procedures. You know, we're not trying to compete with the big boys. We're not trying to be a St Andrews. You know, we there's not a Tyneagy degree in counterterrorism. This is something that's affordable. It's accessible to those people, and it's followed up with, in order to attain the certificate, which is issued by Buckland University, you have to submit some written course material. Basically, you have to sort of demonstrate your learning from the training course, and then you can be awarded this level 5 certificate in from Buckland University. That for us has led to a lot of other really interesting conversations, and one of the conversations that came from that was we were asked if we could help with something on the cyber platform. Now, we're not a cyber organisation, and we never claim to be cyber. But as I spoke about a few minutes ago, there are crossovers from terrorism. And one of those crossovers, of course, is the use of computers to further terrorist causes. Now, whether that be from terrorism financing or from, you know, through ransomware and all the rest of it. But so cyber terrorism is a real thing, as you know. So we've now developed a cyber terrorism course, which we will be releasing hopefully in quarter one of this year. We've also got a crisis and leadership course, which Richard Bingley has developed for us. That's his area of expertise. And for us, it's about providing these relatively inexpensive but really accessible training courses that can be of benefit to our members. And not just to our members, I mean, anybody can sign up for them. But it's about giving some tangible, relevant information that can just help people to be better prepared. Now, one of the developments, I guess, from our initial training course is the imminent legislation around the protect duty. And what we want to make sure that we do is that once we understand exactly what the legislation requires of organisations, so we'll incorporate that into our training course. And we think we've got a pretty good handle on that, in terms of, you know, some of the information that came out of the first and second reports. So we've geared it so that it focuses what we believe will be the requirement for, you know, the appropriate person to for any organisation. But we will fine tune that when we get nearer to the final legislation. But it's about those small organisations that don't have, as you rightly said, that don't have their own in-house security capability. But they might have a facilities manager or a building manager or someone who is ultimately going to be responsible for being compliant with the legislation when it comes through. And we want to just give them a way of ensuring that they're doing everything they can reasonably do to keep their location and their customers, their clients, their staff as safe as possible and compliant with the legislation.
Sounds really, really good. I mean, and exactly what sort of organisations need. It's not only about understanding the awareness and the, and what the threat is, but it's also about giving them those practical skills and knowledge that they can apply to their businesses, their locations, to put themselves in the best position possible to protect themselves. So fantastic. So you mentioned there's a few new things coming out for the next year with Tiny G, some of the stuff that you're working on. Are there any events coming up in the future that have been organised?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got an event in Dublin coming up in it's March or April. I can't remember the exact date off the top of my head. I'll let you have that shortly. We've got Dublin. We've got in March. We have been invited over to Chicago. One of our senior volunteer leaders works for an organisation which based the global headquarters are in Chicago, and they've asked us if we'd be happy to do an event over there. So we said yes, of course. So we'll be presenting in Chicago, and the same week we're hoping to be in Washington DC. We had a meeting in the British Embassy out there about 5 years ago, which was really thoroughly well received, and we've been asked to go back. So we're going back to DC. Later in the year, we will be in New York in probably September or October, hopefully back also to the West Coast. We had a really successful first foray into the West Coast of the US in June of 2022, where we were hosted by the Disney Corporation. And we are in conversation with them about trying to do something else this year. And of course, London. So we haven't got our London dates finalised yet, but we've been invited by some of our members in the UK to look at dates for the UK. Oh, actually, we've also got another one in Hull in the northeast in March. More details of that. So, what we're going to do with all of these things is, as we get the dates finalised and the speakers finalised, we'll circulate these on our website and on our LinkedIn group to our members and Twitter. But yeah, it's going to be a fun year. It's probably going to be the busiest year that we've ever had. Actually, we've got more events now than we've had. We've been lucky that we've always been sort of popular and in demand, but we are now in a position where we've really got the opportunity to get out there. We've got resources now that we've not had in the past. We've got more volunteers who come along and help us, who want to get involved and enable us to facilitate these various different events. So this year is going to be a really full-on event. I'm just looking at my diary, actually. I've just noticed we've got London on the 24th of February. I'd forgotten about that one. I will get you the full details of that, actually, and let you have that. So we've got London 24th of Feb, all in March. We're going back to the BBC as well. We were in the BBC last year and up at Salford Quays at the Media City. That was really well received. And they've asked us to go back. So we must have done something right there. So, yeah, we've got lots going on internationally. And just before Christmas, Dave and I had a meeting with New Zealand police based in London, who are keen to facilitate us to hold a conference in New Zealand and potentially in Australia too. That's probably going to be next year, 2024 now. But so, we got interested inquiries from all of these international colleagues. The United Arab Emirates spoke to us when we were at the BBC last year and are keen to see if we can do something with them. So we're potentially going to have an event in either Abu Dhabi or Dubai. Not sure if that'll be this year or next year, but there's lots of really interesting opportunities. And of course, we are also extending out our advisory council. So at the moment, we have advisory councils in the UK, two or three actually in the United States. We've got one in the Midwest based in Chicago, one in New England, one in New York City. And we are developing further of these advisory councils. We've got another one that's being set up in mainland Europe, going to be based in Amsterdam. And so we're going to be having an initial conference out there. That would probably be this summer, hopefully. So, again, we'll share that information with you and your listeners. We'll get that information to you once these days are confirmed for sharing. And they're all more than welcome to come along. That's the beauty of the Tiny G. You know, we don't try to keep ourselves just to ourselves. We want the more people we can get there, the better. We do to some extent vet the people that come to our events, because we don't want the bad guys turning up, frankly. But as long as you're not a bad guy, then everyone is welcome, and that's the beauty of what we do. Usually the only limitation is the amount of space that we can offer. So if we've got a 250 seat arena, then that's our limit. If we could fit 1,000 people in, we would. So yeah, lots going on. I will absolutely make sure that you are kept informed of those dates, of all of those things as they arise. But yeah, we're very busy, very, very lucky that we've got so many fantastic volunteers internationally who give their time freely to enable us to put these events on. And I think you'll see really from this year onwards, we're going to be increasing the number of events we do and the different types of events as well, importantly. So it's not just the big conferences, actually. It's not just the 200 people in an arena kind of thing. It's the breakfast briefings. One of our long-term partners has asked us if we can put on sort of some semi-social events for them, sort of a networking evening with perhaps a keynote speaker or a breakfast briefing. So we're looking to widen the opportunity that we provide for people to come along to different events. If they can't necessarily give up a full day for a conference, but they might be able to give up a morning for a bacon sandwich and a cup of tea. So that's the kind of thing we're looking to do. And I'm really excited about this year. I think we've got a lot of great stuff about to happen, and very positive that it's going to be beneficial.
Definitely, sounds like you've got a very busy but exciting year ahead, and I will certainly be trying to come to as many of those events as I possibly can.
Speak for us as well.
So what we do for our listeners is, on our podcast page, we do have a description of the podcast, so we'll make sure that we put those key dates in there for them as well. But I'm assuming people can also go to your website as well for a list of all upcoming events as and when they're booked and how to register.
We've got an event section on there, and we'll keep that as we get information comes in of confirmation of our events. They will go on there. We also send all of that out by our email alert system to everybody that's registered with us. If any of your listeners would like to join Tiny G completely for free, it's simply just www.tinyg.info is our website, and there's a big link at the top of the page to literally just pop that in, and they'll be once they've been vetted, which doesn't take long, they'll be added to our membership database, and they'll receive all of the information about our events wherever they are in the world, and all the other information that we share for free.
Fantastic. And I'll also make sure that we put a link to your website in our episode description as well. And the course we discussed much about, is that, can they find more information about the course on your website as well? Or is that somewhere else?
On the website, again, the email will come out with dates of that to those people that are on our subscription list. On our LinkedIn page and on our Twitter page. So we sort of share it broadly to as many people as possible. Absolutely. By all means, we will definitely put all of the information relating to the events, relating to the courses. We're finalising some of the details on a couple of those courses that I mentioned, and so the dates aren't set for all of them yet. I mean, our next actual course for the level 5 in management awareness of terrorism starts on the 16th of January. We still have places available for that. So if anybody would like to come along to that, probably the easiest way, the most quickly accessible way is on our LinkedIn page if they want to have a look at that. Or they go on the website. We'll keep that fully up to date with all the information. The idea really is to make our information as broad as possible. Sometimes social media actually is a quicker way of doing that, and we focus on that quite heavily. So the Twitter page and the LinkedIn page are probably the best ways to get immediate information. They're easier to update than the website sometimes. But absolutely.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, Andy, I really appreciate you giving up your time to join us today and to talk to us about Tiny G, where it's come from, and the sort of fantastic work you're doing and what you've got planned for the year ahead. What we'd like to do for all of our guests that come on the podcast is to, as a thank you for your time, is to make a small donation to a charity of your choice on your behalf. So just wondering, is there a particular charity that you'd like us to donate to?
Yeah, that's really kind. Yes, that's absolutely lovely. Well, one that's very close to my heart is the autism charity, and I think there's Autism UK or something like that. If you could perhaps make a donation to them for me, I'd be incredibly grateful.
Yeah, no problem at all. Cheers, Andy. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Carl. Thank you. Lovely to speak to you. Yes.